now at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you, Scott, and hello, how is your plant world doing? If you'd like to talk about it, you can simply call 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. And leading off every Saturday morning is the Good Gardening Stroll. Afterwards, we'll discuss what's impacting, with these temperatures and winds and everything else, your trees, your perennials, that hillside, those shrubs, lawns, ground cover, anything planted in your outdoors, and then we can step inside and have a look at your tropical world. From routine care and maintenance to what else is going on with that, and should you be putting this plant in a bigger pot because it's wilting, or should you be pruning anything? Is there insects that you need to be worrying about? Specific or suspicious growth or spots? And can you do some transplanting right now? Taking cuttings and beyond. I'll share my knowledge to help you make a good decision on whatever action you're considering. But please remember, this is your show, and I appreciate you having me in your plant world. Another very important player is James. He's producing today, so when you call in, he will answer the phone. He just needs your first name, and then he'll put it up on the computer screen, and then I will talk to you. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. And besides our Saturday morning get-together, I can come to your plant world for an on-site consultation, a walk and talk. My website, MikeMillerDesigns.com, on the homepage has my email address and phone number. Probably better email than phone number or calling me because it's just easier to do it that way. Well, let's get strolling. This walk is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Well, the first day of spring is going to be Monday. And as tradition has it, as seasons change, I spend the Good Gardening Stroll talking about our plant world. Well, winter is leaving some winterized memories with these temperatures. I mean, when I stepped out this morning, I knew it was going to be cold. And I knew the wind was blowing and everything else, but boy, oh boy, it was really brutal. And the Kaffir lilies I have, the Clivias, they remain inside in the basement under grow lights because I almost took them out earlier this year when it was having a warm spell, and I kept thinking, well, it's probably going to stay warm. Ha, ha, ha. If I would have moved them outside, they would have been wiped out as a result of that. And these Kaffir lilies I've had for decades. When I first moved back to St. Louis from California, my Aunt Cleo bought these Kaffir lilies at Bear's Garden Center, and then she gave them to me, and I still have had them, and she probably gave them to me in maybe 78. Yeah, probably something. Anyway, so I can't remember the exact date. But anyway, as you look outside, beyond those Kaffir lilies in the basement under those grow lights, the Zoysia lawn's tan color says, well, it's not really warm yet. As the crocus and daffodils say, wahoo, they are really doing well. The crocus, this cool weather really kind of keeps them looking pretty good. But the pansies I have, they hadn't shown any kind of, let's say, cold weather impact. But today when I went outside on my way to the car, the ones that are kind of sitting out in the open, they don't look so good. Ones up in our kitchen window on the outside, they look fine, but some of them don't look so good. The bird buffet that I have, which is a section of sidewalk, sometimes there are over 50 different, not different types, but different birds there at one time, just gobbling up all the seed I throw on the sidewalk. The sedum that's growing between the street and sidewalk is rising up and looking pretty good. It's getting really green. And the potted Alberta spruce, along with the boxwood and mugo pines, are vibrating green color because everything else is not really all that green. While above, the sugar maple trees are yawning as they're just starting to wake up. Empty pots are scattered around the landscape, and they're wondering what will be our inhabitants later on. The river rock steel-edged foundation outline that I have put in long ago when we first moved to the house 16 years ago, they're showing some good, bad, and ugly plants growing in the river rock. But overall, just like the Irish band U2 sings, it's a beautiful day. So even though it is really cold, it's really nasty, it's really horrible, but it's a nice day outside. So again, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
Live and local, this is St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Yes, it's time to take care of those spring flowering bulbs. I've done my first fertilization last week or so, and just do the half label rate and continue fertilizing your crocus, your daffodils, your tulips, and everything until they finish flowering. And once the flowering is finished, the foliage will start sort of declining. Then you can do this, stop the fertilizing. But with this cool weather, it's going to keep them, I think, looking pretty good. So, but what you can do also is maybe put, once the flower's finishing and the foliage starts going downhill a little bit, leave it. Don't cut it off, because the foliage on every plant helps build up the future. Now, with a lot of the bulbs, like some of the tulips of newer varieties and things like that, they're probably only going to give you maybe 1 and maybe 2 years maximum as far as reblooming and everything else. I've got a bunch of tulips coming up in pots that I got a couple years ago from Brightside St. Louis. And this year, they're just pushing up foliage and no flowers whatsoever. So, but I don't mind it. I get to look at the tulip foliage. And it's not as spectacular, of course, as the flowering, but it's still okay with me. It's nothing wrong with that. And you've got plants. You want to keep your plants healthy. Well, what should you be thinking about doing? Well, you're not sure. Should you be fertilizing? What, you know, what kind of fertilizer and everything else? Well, head to your favorite garden center and just tell them what kind of plant you have. They may have a fertilizer with a specific type of nutrient levels and micronutrients for a particular plant, whether it's an evergreen, whether it's a rose, whether it's your tomatoes or anything else, because it does make a difference to have all those kind of things working together in your soil. Of course, you've improved your soil and it really works well because you've added a lot of organic matter to it. So that's you know, something to be really conscious of. When it gets cold like this, expect, even if you've had mole activity in your landscape recently, this will shut the earthworms down as far as their movement, because the ground is back getting really cold again. So with no earthworms moving, that means none of the moles will be moving, because that's what they're headed for, is for that earthworm activity, and that's how they find it. Other things that you can be conscious of, getting the pre-emergent down. I'm surprised. This is the first year that I can remember where from the first time I saw some forsythia in bloom, that was a couple weeks ago, and they're still in bloom. So this, you know, this cool/cold weather has really been a preservative. It's like kind of your florist where you can go, or your, you know, where you can go and they've got a lot of cut flowers and everything else in refrigerated circumstances. So these are live plants that are getting refrigerated. So just keep that in mind as well. And know that if you do have dogs, and where the dogs go, you know, urinate, what happens to those spots? Well, it's a high nitrogen content in their urine. And that basically can kill lawn, it can kill lots of different things. So just kind of keep that in mind, that there's nothing you can really do about it. I mean, you can try to flush it and everything else, but this is just part of the, let's say, circumstances of having, you know, dogs. And dogs are great fun. And if you still have your ornamental grasses and you haven't cut back the brown blades yet, well, certainly you can do it. And you still have the option to dig them up and divide them and relocate them if you want to. So you got plenty of time to do that. Putting your pre-emergent down, as that was going back to the forsythia story, you can still get the pre-emergent down. There's probably some of the seeds that are already have bloomed, but there's probably some that have been not bloomed, but germinated, and then consequently, they're just kind of laying there. And when the weather warms up, like Scott said, it was going to start warming up this, coming up week, they may start popping again. So you can still get your pre-emergent down. A couple weeks ago, when it was getting warm, I said, better not be putting it down. But it just goes to show you, you can never really tell what Mother Nature is going to do. Other things that you can think about, if you go to your garden center and you buy some plants, whether they're annuals, perennials, or anything else, those plastic pots or flats or whatever it happens to be should be recycled. So keep that in mind and do that. Easter lilies, Easter is coming up. So if you start to get Easter lilies as gifts or giving them yourself, they are hardy varieties of lilies. So once you have them inside, you can keep them in a sunny location inside. And when they finish flowering, you can move them outside, and they would prefer a sunny location outside as well. So it's going to have the more or less a classic kind of a lily-type bulb. Evergreens, hedges-wise and deciduous, pruning, the ones that broadleaf evergreen ones that got damaged in the winter, early winter or probably late fall, it's just going to be it's really kind of depressing because you get out there and you go, oh, gosh, should I be pruning? And just or is this dead or whatever it happens to be? Well, you can just kind of, keep in mind or just take a look at it and take the flexibility. But most of the things only got cosmetically damaged, whether it be a euonymus evergreen type of hedge or some of the boxwoods or things like that. So just, keep that, like I said, keep that in mind, and you probably or you should be seeing some new buds emerging. So if you want to do some pruning, I would probably say don't do any pruning this year. Just leave them alone, let them come emerge, and then you can go ahead and prune them next year or in the late fall, early winter. Other things that you need to be thinking about if you're choosing new plant material, probably the situation that I see most as far as people's in their landscape that, have me come out and everything else is the plants that they have selected for an individual spot. They're going for the aesthetic value of that particular plant, but they're not really taking a look at what the mature size is going to be. So a lot of times the plants are going to get way too large for the location, whether it's a proximity to the house's foundation, the sidewalk, the driveway, the street, or whatever it is. And that's, that can be a little bit disappointing simply from the standpoint once they start really growing and getting, let's say, good size, then they keep going and they overgrow the location and then cause problems that you didn't anticipate. So just take a look at anything that you're considering to put into your landscape and how big is it going to get and where should it be? So that's really, like I said, probably one of the most common mistakes that I see that are made. And a lot of times you're inheriting these kind of things where the previous owners have planted and then when you were looking at the house, you were looking at the landscape, but not to the point of what this particular plant's going to do and how big is it going to get or anything else. But a good example of this is like the Japanese maples, the ones that look like umbrellas, they can get 6 to 8 to 10 feet across. So, I mean, that's really a lot bigger than what people think. And they put it, if you put it like 2 feet off your sidewalk, it does very well. But then all of a sudden it becomes real trouble. And then when you do have to prune it to get it back so you can, let's say, use your sidewalk without any kind of problems or trouble, then the aesthetic value goes downhill. So keep that in mind, too. Mulching, yes, you can. Mulching this time of year, just don't over-mulch. Too much mulch can cause more problems than it does good. So around perennials or in ground cover circumstances or things like that, 1 to 2 inches of mulch should be adequate. And trees and shrubs, any kind of woody plant material, 3 to 4 inches. More than that, again, it can cause problems from the standpoint of humidity, of fungus, and things along that line. And just realize that that is more trouble than what the mulch actually helps. Mulch is a buffer, but also it breaks down and can add to your soil's nutrient level. And that's, you know, the good quality of a mulch. The mulches of a period of time when they used to be, let's say, non-organic, yeah, they lasted for a long time. They did fade because of just the sun fading them, but they didn't really help your plant material. So using organic mulches, like the ones that St. Louis Composting, you know, carries, is to the, again, to the advantage of the plant material. And then finally, when you're, or not finally, but another thing to think about, if you do have perennial beds, once you start to see the then break the dormancy of the wintertime, you can pull the mulch back away from them and go ahead and just don't pile the mulch up over the growing, let's say the crown, the growing point, because that's going to help the growth. So it looks like we got the first call of the day, and we do have phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Let's head over to Ted's yard. Hi, Ted.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Mike, I'm wanting to do a privacy screening between my neighbor and I. I put like a 2-foot buffer or a berm, and I want to plant something that doesn't grow over, say, 8 feet. It has to be an evergreen. And it can't be a tree, you know, that branches onto their property. I've looked at these arborvitaes or whatever they call them, but they go up to like 18 feet tall, and that's really crazy out of the, you know, realm. I'd like to do something that would maybe not go over 8 feet. What's your suggestion?
I would probably look at the upright yews.
Okay, now what does that come already 3-4 foot tall?
You can probably, I mean, you might have to look around and find them that big. Usually they're not going to be quite that big, but they're going to grow narrow and it's going to stay within the width of the space that you have. There's not too many things that that are just going to stay 2 feet wide. That's where your trouble is.
Well, I don't have a problem with it only being 2 foot wide. It's that I got a big oak tree in the front yard, and I don't want, you know, in the canopy of the oak tree is going to give them partial shade. Well, the lower limb is probably, you know, 10 feet.
Right. But, I think the most durable thing is going to be your upright yews. So,
okay, now, is that a evergreen?
Yes, evergreen, okay. Narrow growing, and grows virtually straight up. And so, like, you know, take a look at your local nursery, or just take a look at, maybe go online for some of the nurseries in the region, because some of them will have some larger upright yews. Some of them will only have, let's say, if they're in a 5-gallon pot, they're probably only going to be about maybe 2 to 3 feet.
Okay. Now, did you say they were fast growing or no?
Well, they're relatively fast growing. They're not going to shoot up, let's say, you're not going to see them getting 5 or 6 feet high in 2 to 3 years by any means. So it's going to take, you know, a considerable period of time. Another thing would be to put trellises up and then grow the evergreen honeysuckle vine on it, and maybe in the combination with the upright yew.
Okay. All right, we'll give a look at that yew, and then we'll go from there. Thanks for your help.
Sure, my pleasure. And let's see, let's go now over to Kurt's yard. Hi, Kurt.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Last year I had a stump that I was trying to kill, and I put Toradol in it, and it was in a spot where I had a lot of luck growing tomatoes. And I just wasn't sure, am I good to grow tomatoes in that area this year? Or is that kind of a, you know, don't grow your food stuff where you put that poison?
You should be okay, but I would be a little bit cautious and not grow something there. It should, I mean, what you need to do is, you know, get the label of what you put on there and read that label and see what the actual label says, as opposed to just like me saying no, yes, or whatever it happens to be.
Well,
if you don't
if
you don't have the product anymore, then you can just go online and look and see what they say about, you know, how much residual effect this could have on other plant material, not just, you know, plant material that are edibles, but plant material just in general.
Well, it was about clear as mud is what I would say. So, you know, I tried to read. I got another question for you. Blueberries, you know, I see them selling over at one of the home stores. I was thinking about getting those. Do they grow as vines or do they grow as bushes? Like, how do those grow, or do they even do well in Missouri?
They're kind of a little bit iffy, but they grow as shrubs, and they need a very acidic soil. So the, you know, you're going to have to work on your soil with iron and sulfur and things like that to get the pH of your soil down around, you know, between 5 and 5.5. So they,
gotcha.
If they don't have that, you know, super acidic soil, then they may grow, but they're not going to really be productive.
Can I ask one more quick question?
Sure.
Raspberries, so I've got a couple of plants that I've had in. Now I got three of them that have been in and they've lived. I thought I could try to train them into being a vine, but doesn't seem like they take to training very well. And should I cut those back in the spring or the fall, or how do you treat those things?
You should just be, you know, they should be in a spot where you can just leave them alone. That's how you're going to get, you know, if you want any fruit production off of them. But no, you can't make them into a vine. They're, I mean, their stems are pretty rigid, and they just, you know, I would say just leave them alone. If they don't, then the location that you have them, you can't just let them go, then I would consider moving them.
Gotcha. Okay. Yep. Thanks.
Sure.
A wealth of knowledge. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Mike Miller, KMWash Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
KMOX is Cardinals Radio.
It's Cardinals spring training baseball today as they take on the Tigers. Ameren pregame show 11:55, first pitch 12:05. Hear the game here. KMOX is Cardinals Radio.
Back to the phones we go, and let's head over to Patricia's yard. Hi, Patricia.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We have a lot of clemone seeds that we saved from last winter, and we wondered if we could just plant them now, or do we need to wait till it gets warmer?
Yeah, I wouldn't plant them now. I mean, you can, but you're not going to get anything out of it. So this is cleome seeds, right?
Right.
Okay, so you might as well wait till it's warmer because that's, you know, ideally, if you feel like you're going to have too much going on a little bit later, you can plant them. But sometimes you get them planted and, you know, when the ground is cold, they're not going to start, you know, growing or germinating or anything at all until the ground starts warming up. And then you're going to be going out there, or you're going to be thinking, did those, you know, what happened with the seeds? Are they going to be okay? Are they going to, you know, whatever. So I would say,
do we need to prepare the ground any particular way?
Yeah, just make sure it's a, you know, I'm assuming you said that you had them before. That's where you harvested?
Yes, and we'd like to start another bed of them.
Okay, so just whatever, you know, whatever location that you had them in, just try to find a location that's going to be very similar to that one. So they really like to be in, you know, more or less a sunny location. And with a organic, well-drained soil.
Okay, do they need to be covered up when we plant them, or do we just spread them out on the ground?
No, you should put them underneath the surface of the soil. Because if you don't, then you're inviting potentially, let's say, squirrels and birds and other people that are not really people, that are animals, to come over and have a snack.
Okay.
So you don't have to put them deep. I mean, just put them on the surface and then kind of tamp them down. And if you're going to put any kind of mulch, not more than a half inch or so of mulch over the top.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. My pleasure. And let's see, where should we go now? Let's go over to Jane's yard. Hi, Jane.
Oh, good morning. I happen to be the unhappy recipient of some shotgun fungus a couple of years ago. And it's on, it doesn't show on the brick part of the house, the bottom, but I've got the spots on the beige siding above the brick.
Right.
And I couldn't get it off, and I thought, well, go through the winter and it'll wear off. Well, no, and not the summer, no, and not the next winter.
Right.
So it's still there. How in the world do I get that off?
Probably, you know, it's maybe a little bit tough because I don't know what type of siding, but this sounds like a good question for Scott Mosby with the Home Improvement Show.
Oh. Okay.
So, I mean, that shotgun fungus stuff is really nasty. It's horrible.
Yep.
And like, I don't know. I mean, you could just take, if you want to, just take, let's say, a paper towel, put some dishwashing fluid on it, and just go out and try to rub one spot and see if that rubs it off. But you may have to, like I said, call Scott Mosby or, in relationship to getting that so you don't do any damage to your siding.
Oh, that's okay. That's where you're going.
Yeah.
All righty. Well, chucks. Will it wear off eventually?
Well, it should, but, it may be, depending upon the type of siding you have, it may just kind of be there. But like I said, just take a paper towel, some dishwashing liquid, and just put it on the paper towel and then rub it on a couple spots and see if that takes it off.
Okay.
All righty. Well, dishwashing fluids are pretty friendly to most sidings.
Mm-hmm. Okie doke. Well, I shall try that, and I'm here today all day, so I'll try calling calling him.
Great.
Okay. Well, thanks so much.
Yep. Good luck with that. Yeah, that's a terrible fungus. And if you don't know what this fungus is, if you start seeing black specks on your siding and you're not really if you can't figure out where it's coming from, well, just go online and look at the shotgun fungus, and you can find out exactly what your problem is. Let's head over to Pat's yard now. Hi, Pat.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
A quick question. I have purchased two packages of anemone. I guess it's the little root things. There's three in a package, and it said to plant them after the chance of a last frost. Is there some way that I can start them indoors in a pot to kind of give them a little bit of boost, or is there something, you know, right now they just look like little nubbins in a package.
Yeah, you can go ahead and do that. It would be, the ideal circumstance would be if you had, or you can get, a grow light to grow them underneath. But if you're going to do it, put them in the sunniest window that you possibly have. And don't put them in a very large pot. You just want to go ahead and put them in a small pot, and then you can, if you're going to put them in the ground outside or you're going to put them in larger pots, but, to actually get them germinated and, let's say, starting, use a small pot.
Yeah, I had some, really last year and the year before, and they did beautiful. And then I'm assuming it was a vole, V-O-L-E, that tunneled through because I didn't see any, like, little air holes or whatever, and just literally destroyed them.
Right.
So I thought I'll try putting more in this year.
Yeah, there's certain, even if you have moles there, like the moles won't eat them, but what happens is things like voles and mice will use the old mole tunnels, and if they come across root systems of plant material like anemones or whatever it happens to be, then they're going to go, yum, and then they'll cause a problem.
Well, I think they enjoyed their breakfast, lunch, and dinner then, so, okay, I will give it a try, and can I just plant them, if I do them in pots, just in regular potting soil?
No, I'd use potting mix.
That's what I meant, potting mix. That's what I have.
Yeah. Potting mix is much better than potting soil.
Right. Yeah, I have to look at the bag, but I know I've got the mix. So, okay, well, I appreciate your help. Thank you so much.
Yep, good luck. And let's head over to Carol's yard. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Mike, I have about a half a dozen Phalaenopsis orchids, and I've been kind of fooling around with them for about the past maybe 6 years. All of them are blooming and have been since Christmas, except one, and it's the oldest one I have. Its root system looks good, and the leaves look good, but it will not bloom. It hasn't bloomed in over a year. Is it just old, or would you just toss it and try again?
Well, it may not be old. It may be, you know, no reason to toss it. Are you fertilizing?
Yes. So I fertilize weekly.
Okay, mm-hmm. With the orchid food and everything else? Yeah, I've got a couple of those myself, and it's, you know, one of them, you know, the oldest one that I have, which I can't remember exactly how old it is, it's kind of, let's say, petered out as far as flowering goes, whereas some of the other ones, they can flower a couple times a year, and that's, you know, I mean, it's just kind of a little bit disappointing. So what you could do is go to the Missouri Botanical Garden and see the put that question in there to see what they would recommend. And then there, of course, there is an orchid society here in St. Louis that meets at the Botanical Garden. And you might attend a orchid society meeting and see what the people that are, you know, members, you know, think about that, you know, what's
right. Right. But in your opinion, this one, I think I got this one about, I'm going to say 5 to 10 years ago, maybe five to seven years ago, something like that.
Right.
It's when I first started growing orchids. And I moved them from one window to a different window, and I put, I have that river rock underneath, and I keep that filled every week just up to, you know, so they have plenty of humidity.
Right.
And the others are just doing really well. Like you say, they'll bloom for, One time I had one blooming for, I think, 5 months straight.
Right.
And they're just lovely. But this one poor little guy, he just won't bloom anymore. And I just didn't know if he was ready for, you know, whether.
The compost pile?
and he's the first one I bought.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I kind of feel bad. And he looks healthy, the plant, but it just won't bloom.
Right. I've had the same circumstance. And to be honest with you, I'm still just growing it because, you know, the root system is kind of interesting, the way it kind of sprawls all over the place. And then I like the shape and the darkness of the foliage.
Right. Right. Yes, they are. I think they're beautiful plants myself. So anyway, okay, well, take your advice, and maybe I can find out more from Missouri Botanical Garden.
Right.
But you're just keeping yours along for the ride, too.
Yeah, just for the fun.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Carol. Mike Miller, KMWash Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
All right, folks, let's head over to Phyllis's yard. Hi, Phyllis.
Yeah, Mike. About 6 years ago, I had problems with cinch bug in my yard. And through your show, you recommended a lawn place. And they've done great work for the last 6 years, but this year I didn't get a contract or anything on it, and I'm left scrambling to find a reputable company, and I'm getting all these flyers in the mail. How do I go about finding a reputable company that I'd be satisfied and they know exactly what they're doing?
Well, sometimes it's a roll of the dice, to be honest with you. So do you have a garden center that you go to?
No, not really.
Oh, because I was going to say that would be a good place to head to your favorite garden center and just see who they are associated with, not necessarily in the same company or anything else, but who they would possibly recommend. But also you can just, you know, try the Missouri Botanical Garden and see if their website might, they probably don't, but it's just, you know, it's going to be a little bit iffy. Is this company that you've previously owned, or are they just completely gone?
No, they're up in Wentzville, and they just decided they're not coming south this year.
Okay, what you might do is contact them and see who they may recommend.
Uh-huh.
And that way, you know, if it doesn't have to be an exact association or anything else, but just tell them, you know, you've had them for several years, so they've got to know who you are, and you've been loyal as far as payments and everything else, and get their recommendation.
Okay, then. Thank you.
Yep, my pleasure. And now let's go to Donna's yard. Hi, Donna.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
I talked to you a couple of weeks ago regarding a dwarf crepe myrtle, which I did get one. It arrived in the mail. It's about 15 inches tall and about a 5-inch, a few branches with some leafing out. Root ball is about 8 inches with some soil. My question is, the grower recommends putting it in a pot for a while, and it didn't specify for how long. I have about a 2-gallon pot, and I wanted to know regarding soil, have you heard of Earth Grow? I wanted to know if I can use that straight as it is from the bag, and should I fertilize, and how often to water it since it's in a pot?
Yeah, I would say, you know, the Earth Grow, I don't know that particular product, but just so it's, you know, it's a well-drained, you know, potting soil is basically, or potting mix is really what you're looking to do. And as far as fertilizing, you don't do any kind of fertilizing. If it's already leafing out, it's way ahead of what it needs to be for our weather. So you're going to have to be really cautious with it.
Right.
And so what I would do is a 2-gallon pot might be a little bit large, but that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. And just probably put it put a plastic saucer underneath it. But don't just set it down in the saucer. Maybe put some pea gravel or something to keep it a little bit elevated. And just watch the potting mix or whatever it's growing in. And once it starts shrinking away from the size of the pot, then go ahead and water it at that time. And then don't do any fertilization until we're really getting, you know, probably almost 2 months from now. So like first or mid-May, that would probably be when I would do the first fertilization.
Okay. The other question, though, I do have, I want to put it in a spot where currently I have a river rock bed with some weed barrier. Of course, it's been invaded with violets, so I'm going to remove that rock. And I wanted to know, should I remove that weed barrier since it might be affected by those violet seeds? I was thinking of putting a new weed barrier and then putting some, cedar mulch on top of that.
That's fine. The weed barriers are great. The only thing they don't, you know, impact, they stop things from growing underneath it, you know, and coming up and growing through it, but they don't prevent things. That's why you have the violets invading because the violet seeds came in the top, went down through the rock and everything else, and then they can germinate, and that's how all weeds can do. So weed barriers are great, but they're only good for, let's say, perennial weeds or annual weeds that are underneath, weed seeds that are underneath them. So they doesn't affect anything at all as far as, you know, being able to grow from the top downward.
Well, I could tell you this much, though, that the landscape company that installed this rock, I noticed that they threw mud on top of the weed barrier before they put the rock on.
Wow.
And when I discovered that later on, I thought, well, that was not very smart.
No, it wasn't. That's surprising.
No, I know. I should have been out there watching, but I didn't. I trusted them. My mistake. But anyway, that's what I was asking. If I put cedar mulch down on top of the weed barrier, then that should it not keep out the violets?
Well, it should, but still, the violets are pretty tough. Growing down through the mulch like that might be kind of tough. But Donna, got to run. So Mike Miller, KMR's Garden Hotline. I will see you after the news.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you, Scott. And as I look out our window, we're looking at, the north side of the Soldiers Memorial. And that Missouri flag is, flying horizontal almost. So, yes, it might be 23 degrees, but I'll bet the wind chill is probably almost single digits. I mean, it was really super cold this morning coming out. I thought, the sun is great and everything else. So if you're sitting in your car and you don't have the windows down or anything, it's probably just fine. But, outside, it's going to be a little bit tough. After the show, I always, head home. Sometimes I go for a consultation or go to the bank or something like that. So I always spend some time working in the yard, but it might be a little bit cold today. But anyway, this is the KMOX Garden Hotline Second Hour, which is a tip of the trowel, and it's a special recognition for individual group or situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. But right now, we have phone lines open, and if you have any ideas, questions, concerns, or comments, you can give us a call, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. James will answer the phone, and he just needs your first name. And thanks for inviting me onto your show, where discussions range from making plant selections for specific locations to caring for, talking about what could be done, what should be done during humdrum times, during the annuals. How about those spring bulbs? Should you be planting your summer bulbs outside yet? No. But how about herbs, vegetables, fruit trees, evergreens, herbaceous, ground covers? How about evergreen ground covers? Perennials, cascading, upright houseplants, warm season, cool season lawns, shrubs, classic roses, and blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm talking about. But please remember that as I share my thoughts, my comments, opinions, and answers is not the only garden path to take to achieve success, but strictly offered for you to consider. As I said before, a very important player in this game is James. He answers the phone. He pushes all the buttons and everything else. And I'm Mike Miller. I've been doing the Garden Hotline since 1994, and I do landscape consultations, which I call a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number. And probably email-wise is a little bit easier than the phone tag circumstances. But today's tip of the trowel is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Spire is doing a whole lot of work in our neighborhood and with the gas lines and everything else. And unfortunately, they set up all their camp right across the street from where we are. And I mean, anytime there's going to be this kind of, activity as far as tractors and working and everything else, there's going to be the noise is pretty intense during the day. And Tracy was a little bit concerned about it, and because we knew that they were going to end up being there for a considerable period of time, because they're probably going to do all the streets in our neighborhood. And she emailed the CEO of Spire, and that's Suzanne Sitherwood, and regarding the noise and everything else. And we're, empathetic and sympathetic towards that circumstance. And then we found out that Alexis, who is Spire's Community Affairs Department, what they did is they decided to move the equipment, the camp, to a new location around Christie Park where there's no houses in close proximity. And that was really wonderful of Spire to do. So a tip of the trowel goes out to the CEO of Spire and also the Community Affairs Department. So they moved the equipment, and now we have back to our view of the park and quietness and everything else. So thanks again. So we appreciate Spire doing the new gas lines and everything else. My grandfather, I don't know if the gas lines in this neighborhood, but he was one of the original people in Laclede Gas that put the gas lines in for the homes as they were being built a long, long time ago, obviously. So thank you, Spire, for being there, for updating our, we've already had our gas line, updated, but all the other people in the neighborhood have not. So thanks to them, and I greatly appreciate it. So Spire gets the tip of the trowel. Let's head over to Curtis Yard. Hi, Curtis.
Good morning, Mr. Merlin. How are you doing this morning?
Very good.
A couple questions. I'm going to ask all three, and you answer them as you will, if that's okay. Because my one question was about soil testing, and I've been trying to figure out how best to grow my do my garden from year to year. And I'm wondering, is there a good home kit that you would recommend, or is there somebody locally I can go to?
Yeah, I would say home kits are just kind of somewhat iffy, to be honest with you. And
So,
the University of Missouri Extension Service, that's who's going to do the testing. They have an office in Kirkwood.
University of Missouri, yeah. And I'm just writing as you're telling me.
Yeah, Extension Service, that's what they'll do is you'll take your soil sample to them. They'll send it down to Columbia, then the test will be done, and then you'll get the results back.
Okay. And the second question was, is it okay to start putting the leafy vegetables in the ground now, like the cabbages, greens, kales, and that kind of thing? Is this the time of year to start planting those?
Well, if the garden centers have them, I would say almost okay, but not for the next couple of days because it's still pretty darn cold. So even though those are winter hardy, cool season edibles, not quite this cool. This is cold, not cool. And so I would say it's a little bit premature.
Okay. And then the last one is, should I be rotating my vegetables in my garden from year to year? If I grow my leafy things in one bed 1 year and my tomatoes and peppers in another, should I alternate those the following year, or can I just keep going, the same thing every year? And if so, how do I make sure that the soil, the extension service will tell me what I can do to keep the soil right? Because that was the next question.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So getting the soil test done, but no, you don't need to rotate their crops.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Miller. I so appreciate you helping me get to where I need to be. And I look forward to the day I have you walk through my yard.
Oh, great. Well, thank you.
And all right, have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye. And now let's go over to Danny's yard. Hi, Danny.
Good morning, Mike. I'll pick your brain about a couple things. Had to dig up a couple places in the front yard a year or so ago to track down a water leak, and now I just got bare dirt there, and it's in full sun, and it's just a barnyard. It's fescue grass. Are you a fan of putting seed down in the spring, or are you just better off to do it after Labor Day?
I would say you could do it. Just don't do it too early because, again, it's an invitation for the birds and other things to sort of eat the seed. But wait until it warms up a little bit. And I would improve that soil, too, because probably since they were digging up for whatever they were digging, it's probably subsoil that's up now on the surface as opposed to, let's say, regular soil that, was growing your lawn prior to this.
Okay. Yeah, we got a pond back here behind the barn, and there's plenty of silt out there on the low end where the water's back down. I guess I could get some of that good topsoil that's washed into the pond.
Yeah, I just make sure that it's well-drained and everything else. So that's really crucial.
Okay, and the next question is, I noticed, I don't know if they were Easter lilies or daffodils, just along the edge of a farm field the other day, and I know the people that own the property, and they stand out like a sore thumb, and I'm afraid eventually they're either going to get ripped up with tillage equipment, or the chemicals are going to get them. Is there a way for the, and evidently there must have been a homestead there at one time, so they've probably been around for decades. Is there a way I can dig up them bulbs and transplant them?
You can certainly do that, but what you need to do is wait until they finish flowering, wait until the foliage starts turning brown, then you can go and dig them up. They're probably planted at least maybe 6 inches, maybe as deep as 8 inches. So just make sure that you go down deep, that you get the entire bulb, shake all the dirt off of them, and then just let them dry, and then install them next fall.
Okay, so hold on. Put them, what, down in the cellar after I dig them up?
Yeah, put them in a paper bag with, if you've got multiples, put layers of newspaper in between each more or less layer of bulbs. And with, again, newspaper and paper bags, no plastic whatsoever.
Okay, and the last question is, these cold weather weeds that are coming up, I'm assuming it's perhaps a henbib?
Well, there's several different kinds of cool season annual weeds, for sure. So, I mean, there's, like I said, it could be henbit. Henbit's all over the place right now, and it's just henbit is actually a cool season annual weed. They actually germinated last August, and when the weather warms up, they're going to be, they'll disappear. But right now, if you're trying to get rid of it, it's in an area where you can use an herbicide, then you can use a broadleaf weed killer.
Okay, could you put down a pre-emergent on them this summer?
Yeah, you would do that in mid to late August.
And is that a granular or is that a liquid?
No, usually it's going to be a granular type thing. But the pre-emergent, wherever you get it, whatever type they have, the timing is going to be most important.
Okay, so probably August or so would be the time to do that.
Yeah, mid to late August. That's when the seeds start germinating, so you want to get the pre-emergent down just prior to that.
Okay, you've been very helpful, as always. Have a great weekend.
Well, great. You do the very same thing. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We have phone lines open.
News, talk, sports. The voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, right now, folks, the annual cool season weeds, they are just exploding, whether it be henbit, like the last gentleman I was talking to was talking about. Henbit is in the Lamium family, which is in the mint family, so it has a square stem, and right now it has purplish flowers on it, and it grows more vertical than a lot of the other cool season annual weeds, which include chickweed, the annual bluegrass. Obviously, that grows vertical as well. There's some prickly lettuce. There's a shepherd's purse and a few other things that are cool season annual weeds. And again, they germinated last August. So right now, the only thing you can do is either hand dig them or go after them with a if it's an annual bluegrass, and you got to use a grass killer. If it's in your grass, you don't want to do that. But if it's in a bed space with perennials or broadleaf perennials, then you're okay. But so just realize that there's not to be a pre-emergence that you'd be putting down now when the yellow forsythia is blooming. That's for the warm season annual weeds, which include knotweed, lamb's quarter, a carpet weed, crabgrass, barnyard grass, foxtail, and a few other things. Let's go back to the phones now. Let's go over to Jim's yard. Hi, Jim.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
Last September, I had a locust tree removed from the front yard, and of course, I had the stump ground out and the roots, and I'm going to clean the mess up come next month. And I went down to the elevator in Valley Park, and they recommended to put some lime down, and my pH level is about 5.5. And then after I'm going to do a little bit of aerating, I'm going to go over to St. Louis Compost and get some compost and some topsoil. I actually knew that a good idea to go ahead and put the lime down or not.
Well, if your pH, what are you going to try to grow in that area?
I'm going to fill it back in and then put down some mixture of fescue and ryegrass.
Okay, so if you're going to grow grass, your lawn likes a pH that is slightly acidic, but they don't like it necessarily that acidic. So, putting some lime down would probably be a good idea.
Okay. Hey, from a player submarine to a B-52, thank you for your service, young man.
Well, thank you. And let's see, where should we go now? Let's go over to Marion's. Hi, Marion.
Hi, Mike. I have two real quick questions. The first is regard to a large rhododendron that I have in my front yard that has always done well, even though I'm a very hands-off gardener, I admit. But this year, the leaves are, it has a lot of buds, but the leaves are sort of a funny color, some of them. Kind of a yellowish with a pinkish red tinge around the edges. And I was just wondering if there is something I should be doing to the rhododendron, talking to it perhaps, or if you have some suggestions.
Well, I don't know if it speaks your language and vice versa, but probably what it is over the years, the soil pH has gotten a little bit alkaline, so you need to go to your favorite garden center and get some iron sulfate or get some fertilizer for acid-loving plants, and because that should have the iron sulfate in the fertilizer. And that's what I would do. That's what the discoloration of the foliage indicates, that the pH is getting too high for the rhododendron to do well and look healthy.
Okay, and do you just kind of like sprinkle it on, you're saying?
Well, it depends upon the type you get. You can sprinkle it. If there's mulch there, you got to pull the mulch back and then sprinkle it on the ground. If you get, a fertilizer that has the sulfur and the iron, it may be a granular type that you can mix up in a bucket and just pour it and let it pour, go down. So it just depends upon what you end up with.
Thank you very much. And I have one other small question. Last fall, I had to have an extremely huge oak tree taken out of the front yard, a tree that was probably, 70 or 80 years old. And the company did a very, very nice job of removing the stump and smoothing, but it's obviously, there isn't any grass or anything growing on it. And I was just wondering if there's, I would plant weeds if I knew how to do it. Anything that would be green over that very obvious big brown circle.
Yeah, there's really nothing that's going to be able to survive that. Even if they ground out the stump and removed a lot of it, there's going to be enough wood products that you're more or less out of luck as far as being able to grow anything for a couple of years, to be honest.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate it, and I love your show. Have a nice day.
Well, thank you. And, so maybe just take a look around and see if you can find don't scatter weed seeds, because the weed seeds can't even grow in that kind of environment. So don't bother doing that. Let's see. Where should we go now? Let's go over to Bill's yard. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, Mike. I was looking at an appliance that would dethatch and scarf your yard. What's your opinion on that?
Mechanical type thing? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. It's an electric. It's about 12, 15 inches wide.
Yeah,
I have a relatively small yard.
Yeah, it should be okay. I mean, you don't have to dethatch all the every year by any means. But if you want to get a mechanical type thing as opposed to just using a regular, let's say, leaf rake, then yes, go ahead for it.
Well, the scarifier, would that just open up the roots so I could reseed after that?
Yeah, basically, it's gonna scar and cut the top surface of the soil. And then probably if you're going to put seed down, I'd also put like a quarter to a half inch of compost on top of the seed just to kind of help it.
Okay. And they also recommended washing your yard with baby soap. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Something about it would kill the waxy bacteria that had built up in your yard.
Ooh. No idea.
Yeah, they put it in a sprayer, sprayed it on your yard. So it didn't sound right to me.
Yeah, that sounds a little weird.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Sure, my pleasure. Mike Miller, KMWash Garden Hotline. Phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
What defines us is who we are as a collective group and how we progress and gain momentum through the season.
The Coach's Corner with St. Louis City Coach Bradley Carnell. Mondays at 9:35 on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Back to the phones we go. Let's head over to Kenny's yard. Hi, Kenny.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
My wife and I really enjoy your program. Every Saturday morning, we're calling from Jackson, Missouri. My question to you is, we have several young azaleas that were supposed to bloom in the spring as well as the fall. We have not seen any type of foliage on them whatsoever. We're just a little concerned whether they might be dead.
Well, there are deciduous-type azaleas. So just understand that. Did they tell you they were an evergreen variety?
Yes.
Ooh. That's not a good sign. I would just say leave them alone right now, but you should see some buds on the end of the branches. But generally, to have a variety of azaleas, even though I know you're further south than St. Louis is, that would bloom twice a year is going to be very iffy at best.
Okay.
So it's not a good variety to be fooling with in reality circumstance. But go ahead and leave them alone and see what happens.
I guess we can go ahead and start feeding probably now. Is that correct?
That's a little bit premature, but I don't know what your weather's like there.
It's just about like what yours is in St. Louis.
So I'd wait for another week or so before I started, before fertilizing.
Okay. All right. Will do. Thank you very much.
Yep. My pleasure. And let's go now to Colette's. Hi, Colette.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling mainly for my daughter. Our front lawn, we live on the north side of the street. There is a tree in front of the house. The grass on the lawn, it isn't really grass. It's sort of moss. What causes that? Is that because there is no sun? She is a real gardener, and her back garden is beautiful. But she's very discouraged with the front because it looks like it's all moss. And we noticed our next-door neighbor and the neighbor down, it looks the same way, but there's trees in front of each one of those houses.
Right.
Is that because there's not enough sun?
Well, not enough sun, and the tree, the soil pH.
Now, at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Thank you, Scott. And as I look out our window, we're looking at, the north side of the Soldiers Memorial. And that Missouri flag is, flying horizontal almost. So, yes, it might be 23 degrees, but I'll bet the wind chill is probably almost single digits. I mean, it was really super cold this morning coming out. I thought, the sun is great and everything else. So if you're sitting in your car and you don't have the windows down or anything, it's probably just fine. But, outside, it's going to be a little bit tough. After the show, I always, head home. Sometimes I go for a consultation or go to the bank or something like that. So I always spend some time working in the yard, but it might be a little bit cold today. But anyway, this is the KMOX Garden Hotline second hour, which is a tip of the trowel, and it's a special recognition for individual group or situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. But right now, we have phone lines open, and if you have any ideas, questions, concerns, or comments, you can give us a call, 314-436-7900. Or 1-800-925-1120. James will answer the phone, and he just needs your first name. And thanks for inviting me onto your show, where discussions range from making plant selections for specific locations to caring for, talking about what could be done, what should be done during humdrum times, during the annuals. How about those spring bulbs? Should you be planting your summer bulbs outside yet? No. But how about herbs, vegetables, fruit trees, evergreens, herbaceous, ground covers? How about evergreen ground covers? Perennials, cascading, upright house plants, warm season, cool season lawns, shrubs, classic roses, and blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm talking about. But please remember that as I share my thoughts, my comments, opinions, and answers is not the only garden path to take to achieve success, but strictly offered for you to consider. As I said before, a very important player in this game is James. He answers the phone. He pushes all the buttons and everything else. And I'm Mike Miller. I've been doing the Garden Hotline since 1994, and I do landscape consultations, which I call a walk and talk. You can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. On the homepage, there's my email address and phone number. And probably email-wise is a little bit easier than the phone tag circumstances. But today's tip of the trowel is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. Spire is doing a whole lot of work in our neighborhood and with the gas lines and everything else. And unfortunately, they set up all their camp right across the street from where we are. And, I mean, anytime there's going to be this kind of, you know, activity as far as tractors and working and everything else, there's going to be the noise is pretty intense during the day. And Tracy was a little bit concerned about it, and because we knew that they were going to end up being there for a considerable period of time, because they're probably going to do all the streets in our neighborhood. And she emailed the CEO of Spire, and that's Suzanne Sitherwood, and regarding the noise and everything else. And we're, you know, empathetic and sympathetic towards that circumstance. And then we found out that Alexis, who's Spire's Community Affairs Department, what they did is they decided to move the equipment, the camp, to a new location around Christie Park where there's no houses in close proximity. And that was really wonderful of Spire to do. So a tip of the trowel goes out to the CEO of Spire and also the Community Affairs Department. So they moved the equipment, and now we have back to our view of the park and quietness and everything else. So thanks again. So we appreciate Spire doing the new gas lines and everything else. My grandfather, I don't know if the gas lines in this neighborhood, but he was one of the original people in Laclede Gas that put the gas lines in for the homes as they were being built a long, long time ago, obviously. So thank you, Spire, for being there, for updating our – we've already had our gas line, you know, updated, but all the other people in the neighborhood have not. So thanks to them, and I greatly appreciate it. So Spire gets the tip of the trowel. Let's head over to Curtis Yard. Hi, Curtis.
Good morning, Mr. Merlin. How are you doing this morning?
Very good.
A couple questions. I'm going to ask all three, and you answer them as you will, if that's okay. Because my one question was about soil testing, and I've been trying to figure out how best to grow my do my garden from year to year. And I'm wondering, is there a good home kit that you would recommend, or is there somebody locally I can go to?
Yeah, I would say home kits are just kind of somewhat iffy, to be honest with you. And so, I mean, the University of Missouri Extension Service, that's who's going to do the testing. They have an office in Kirkwood.
University of Missouri. Yeah. And I'm just writing as you're telling me.
Yeah, Extension Service. That's, you know, what they'll do is they'll take your soil sample to them. They'll send it down to Columbia. Then the test will be done, and then you'll get the results back.
Okay. And the second question was, is it okay to start putting the leafy vegetables in the ground now, like the cabbages, greens, kales, and that kind of thing? Is this the time of year to start planting those?
Well, it's a look. If the garden centers have them, I would say almost okay, but not for the, you know, for the next couple of days because it's still pretty darn cold. So even though those are winter hardy, cool season edibles, not quite this cool. This is cold, not cool. And so I would say it's a little bit premature.
Okay. And then the last one is, should I be rotating my vegetables in my garden from year to year? If I grow my leafy things in one raised in one bed one year and my tomatoes and peppers in another, should I alternate those the following year, or can I just keep going you know, the same thing every year? And if so, how do I make sure that the soil, well, I guess the extension service will tell me what I can do to keep the soil right, because that was the next question.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So getting the soil test done, but no, you don't need to rotate their crops.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Miller. I so appreciate you helping me get to where I need to be, and I look forward to the day I have you walk through my yard.
Oh, great. Well, thank you.
And all right, have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye. And now let's go over to Danny's yard. Hi, Danny.
Good morning, Mike. Well, pick your brain about a couple things. Had to dig up a couple places in the front yard a year or so ago to track down a water leak, and now I just got bare dirt there, and it's in full sun, and it's just a barnyard. It's fescue grass. Are you a fan of putting seed down in the spring, or are you just better off to do it after Labor Day?
I would say you could do it. Just don't do it too early, because, again, you know, it's an invitation for the birds and other, you know, other things to sort of eat the seed. But wait until it warms up a little bit. And I would improve that soil, too, because probably since they were digging up for whatever they were digging, it's probably subsoil that's up now on the surface, as opposed to, let's say, regular soil that, you know, was growing your lawn prior to this.
Okay. Yeah, we got a pond back here behind the barn, and there's plenty of silt out there on the low end where the water's back down. I guess I could get some of that good topsoil that's washed into the pond.
Yeah, I just make sure that it's well-drained and everything else. So that's really crucial.
Okay. And the next question is, I noticed, I don't know if they were Easter lilies or daffodils, just along the edge of a farm field the other day. And I know the people that own the property, and they stand out like a sore thumb. And I'm afraid eventually they're either going to get ripped up with tillage equipment, or the chemicals are going to get them. Is there a way for the, and evidently there must have been a homestead there at one time, so they've probably been around for decades. Is there a way I can dig up them bulbs and transplant them?
You can certainly do that, but what you need to do is wait until they finish flowering, wait until the foliage starts turning brown, then you can go and dig them up. They're probably planted at least maybe 6 inches, maybe as deep as 8 inches. So just make sure that you go down deep, that you get the entire bulb, shake all the dirt off of them, and then just let them dry, and then install them next fall.
Okay, so hold on, put them, what, down in the cellar after I dig them up?
Yeah, put them in a paper bag with, if you've got multiples, put layers of newspaper in between each, you know, each more or less layer of bulbs. And with, again, newspaper and paper bags, no plastic whatsoever.
Okay, and the last question is, these cold weather weeds that are coming up, I'm assuming it's perhaps a henbib?
Well, there's several different kinds of cool season annual weeds, for sure. So, I mean, there's, like I said, it could be henbit. Henbit's all over the place right now. And it's just, you know, it's just henbit is actually a cool season annual weed. They actually germinated last August. And when the weather warms up, they're going to be, you know, they'll disappear. But right now, you're probably, if you're trying to get rid of it, just, you know, and it's in an area where you can use an herbicide, then you can use a broadleaf weed killer.
Okay, could you put down a pre-emergent on them this summer?
Yeah, you would do that in mid to late August.
And is that a granular or is that a liquid?
No, usually it's going to be a granular type thing. But the pre-emergent, wherever you get it, whatever type they have, just, I mean, the timing is going to be most important.
Okay, so probably August or so would be the time to do that.
Yeah, mid to late August. That's when the seeds start germinating, so you want to get the pre-emergent down just prior to that.
Okay, you've been very helpful, as always. Have a great weekend.
Well, great. You do the very same thing. Mike Miller, KMWX Garden Hotline, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. We have phone lines open.
News, talk, sports. The voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Yes, right now, folks, the annual cool season weeds, they are just exploding, whether it be henbit, like the last gentleman I was talking to was talking about. Henbit is in the Lamium family, which is in the mint family, so it has a square stem, and right now it has purplish flowers on it, and it grows more vertical than a lot of the other cool season annual weeds, which include chickweed, the annual bluegrass, obviously that grows vertical as well. There's some prickly lettuce, there's a shepherd's purse, and a few other things that are cool season annual weeds. And again, they germinated last August. So right now, the only thing you can do is either hand dig them or go after them with a, well, if it's an annual bluegrass, and you got to use a grass killer. If it's in your grass, you don't want to do that. But if it's in a bed space with perennials or broadleaf perennials, then you're okay. But so just realize that there's not to be a pre-emergence that you'd be putting down now when the yellow forsythia is blooming. That's for the warm season annual weeds, which include knotweed, lamb's quarter, a carpet weed, crabgrass, barnyard grass, foxtail, and a few other things. So let's go back to the phones now. Let's go over to Jim's yard. Hi, Jim.
Good morning, Mike.
Hi.
Last September, I had a locust tree removed from the front yard, and of course, had the stump ground out and the roots, and I'm going to clean the mess up come next month. And I went down to the elevator in Valley Park, and they recommended to put some lime down, and my pH level is about 5.5. And then after I'm going to do a little bit of aerating, I'm going to go over to St. Louis Compost and get some compost and some topsoil. I asked you, is that a good idea to go ahead and put the lime down or not?
Well, if your pH, what are you going to try to grow in that area?
I'm going to put down, I'm going to fill it back in and then put down some mixture of fescue and ryegrass.
Okay, so if you're going to grow grass, you know, your lawn likes a pH that is slightly acidic, but they don't like it necessarily that acidic. So,
okay.
Yeah, putting some lime down would probably be a good idea.
Okay. Hey, from a Polaris submarine to a B-52, thank you for your service, young man.
Well, thank you. And let's see, where should we go now? Let's go over to Marion's. Hi, Marion.
Hi, Mike. I have two real quick questions. The first is regard to a large rhododendron that I have in my front yard that has always done well, even though I'm a very hands-off gardener, I admit. But this year, the leaves are, it has a lot of buds, but the leaves are sort of a funny color, some of them, kind of a yellowish with a pinkish-red tinge around the edges. And I was just wondering if there is something I should be doing to the rhododendron, talking to it perhaps, or if you have some suggestions.
Well, I don't know if it speaks your language and vice versa, but probably what it is over the years, the soil pH has gotten a little bit alkaline, so you need to go to your favorite garden center and get some iron sulfate or get some fertilizer for acid-loving plants. And because that should have the iron sulfate in the fertilizer, and that's what I would do. That's what the discoloration of the foliage indicates, that the pH is getting too high for the rhododendron to do well and look healthy.
Okay, and do you just kind of like sprinkle it on, you're saying?
Well, it depends upon the type you get. You can sprinkle if there's mulch there, you got to pull the mulch back and then sprinkle it on the ground. If you get a fertilizer that has the sulfur and the iron, it may be a granular type that you can mix up in a bucket and just pour it and let it pour, you know, go down. So
okay.
It just depends upon what you end up with.
Thank you very much. And I have one other small question. Last fall, I had to have an extremely huge oak tree taken out of the front yard, a tree that was probably, 70 or 80 years old. And the company did a very, very nice job of removing the stump
and smoothing, but it's obviously there isn't any grass or anything growing on it. And I was just wondering if there's, I mean, I would plant weeds if I knew how to do it. Anything that would be green over that very obvious big brown circle.
Yeah, there's really nothing that's going to be able to survive that.
Oh,
so even if they took all the, even if they ground out the stump and removed a lot of it, it's still going to be, there's going to be enough wood products that you're more or less out of luck as far as being able to grow anything for a couple of years, to be honest.
Okay. Well, thank you. I appreciate it, and I love your show. Have a nice day.
Well, thank you. And, yeah, so maybe just take a look around and see if you can find, no, I mean, don't scatter weed seeds because the weed seeds can't even grow in that kind of environment. So don't bother doing that. Let's see. Where should we go now? Let's go over to Bill's yard. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, Mike. I was looking at an appliance that would dethatch and scarfire your yard. What's your opinion on that?
Mechanical type thing? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, it's an electric. It's about 12, 15 inches wide.
Yeah,
I have a relatively small yard.
Yeah, it should be okay. I mean, you don't have to dethatch all the, you know, every year by any means. If you want to get a mechanical type thing as opposed to just using a regular, let's say, leaf rake, then yes, go ahead for it.
Well, the scarifier, would that just open up the roots so I could reseed after that?
Yeah, basically, it's gonna scar and, you know, cut the top surface of the soil. And, you know, then probably if you're going to put seed down, I'd also put like a quarter to a half inch of compost on top of the seed just to kind of help it.
Okay. And they also recommended wash your new yard with baby soap. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Something about it would kill the waxy bacteria that had built up in your yard.
Ooh. No idea.
Yeah, they put it in a sprayer, sprayed it on your yard. So it didn't sound right to me.
Yeah, that sounds a little weird.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Sure, my pleasure. Mike Miller, KMWash Garden Hotline. Phone lines open, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120.
What defines us is who we are as a collective group and how we progress and gain momentum through the season.
The Coach's Corner with St. Louis City Coach Bradley Carnell. Mondays at 9:35 on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Back to the phones we go. Let's head over to Kenny's yard. Hi, Kenny.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Very good.
My wife and I really enjoy your program every Saturday morning. We're calling from Jackson, Missouri. My question to you is, we have several young azaleas that were supposed to bloom in the spring as well as the fall. We have not seen any type of foliage on them whatsoever. We're just all concerned whether they might be dead.
Well, there are deciduous type azaleas. So just understand that. Did they tell you they were an evergreen variety?
Yes.
Ooh. That's not a good sign. I would just say leave them alone right now, but you should see some buds on the end of the branches. But generally, to have a variety of azaleas, even though I know you're further south than St. Louis is, that would bloom twice a year is going to be very iffy at best.
Okay.
So it's not a good variety to be fooling with in reality circumstance. But go ahead and leave them alone and see what happens.
I guess we can go ahead and start feeding probably now. Is that correct?
That's a little bit premature, but just, you know, I don't know what your weather's like there.
It's just about like what yours is in St. Louis.
So I'd wait for another week or so before I started, before fertilizing.
Okay. All right. Will do. Thank you very much.
Yep. My pleasure. And let's go now to Colette's. Hi, Colette.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling mainly for my daughter. Our front lawn, we live on the north side of the street. There is a tree in front of the house. The grass on the lawn, it isn't really grass. It's sort of moss. What causes that? Is that because there is no sun? She is a real gardener, and her back garden is beautiful. but she's very discouraged with the front because it looks like it's all moss. And we noticed our next-door neighbor and the neighbor down, it looks the same way, but there's trees in front of each one of those houses.
Right.
Is that because there's not enough sun?
Well, not enough sun, and the tree, you know, the soil pH and everything else. So there's several environmental factors, but there's really nothing you can do. I mean, you can get these products that will say it will kill the moss off. Well, it'll kill it, but it doesn't eliminate it from coming back in the future. So
okay.
If it's, you know, problematic from an aesthetic standpoint, tell her that she should be looking at maybe getting a broadleaf, a type of ivy, periwinkle, or some kind of ground cover versus trying to have a lawn, because she's never going to have a lawn. And those other things are not going to eliminate the moss, but it'll just make it so she can't see it.
Oh. So even a grass seed that requires no sun would not...
Right. A shady spot mix is not going to get rid of the moss.
She's not going to be a happy camper, Mike.
reality hurts.
Right. Okay, thank you so much for your call. You are doing a wonderful job. Well, thank you so much.
Sure, thank
Take
you.
Care. Have a wonderful-
yeah, and I mean, it's just, this is something that... It's really a common type thing. You can go to the Missouri Botanical Garden, and underneath the trees, you're going to see moss. And that's where, I mean, there's a horticultural staff, there's experts on all kinds of different things, but you can't really eliminate it. And there's nothing really wrong with it. I mean, it doesn't look like grass by any means, but I've got a couple spots of it, and I just sort of like embrace it and say, well, that's fine. I've got those sugar maples as street trees, and up close to the trunks, there's moss there, and that's kind of just reality. And now let's head over to David's yard. Hi, David.
Yes. For the past 3 years, I've been trying to grow some roses in front of my house. I planted two pink rose bushes. The first year was fine. I didn't figure I would get roses after just planting them. But for the past 2 years, I've hardly gotten anything, and the leaves... A lot of them are turning yellow with brown spots on them, so I know it's some kind of fungus. So what can I do to eliminate this problem?
Is this a sunny location?
Yeah, in the front of the house it is.
So full sun and everything else, and you improve the soil? Before
I use Miracle-Gro on the rose bushes every year. I pour some on it.
Yeah, but
that's
fine, but I mean, it has to have improved soil for the roses to do well. So in other words, you had to have, mix in compost and things like that, kind of raise that area that you planted them in higher than the other surrounding ground.
So since they're already in the ground, I got vines all over the spindles of my front porch. Can I just... surrounded with compost?
Well, it should be blended into the ground for it to really do well. So in other words, you can go to the Missouri Botanical Garden website and check out what you need to do for the roses. But if you go to the Botanical Garden and check out the rose gardens, they're all raised beds. They're all higher than the surrounding ground that's not planted with the roses.
But what if I dig around the rose bushes and put some a compost in that area? Would that help?
Well, it'll help a little bit, but again, you're not elevating the actual root system and the crown of your roses. That's what needs to be done.
So basically, I need to pull them out and start fresh.
Yeah, pull them out. They're probably okay. I don't know what variety they are other than you said what the color was. Improve that soil, and then you can put those back, or you can go to your favorite garden center and get some new varieties. Now, do you know what type of roses these are? Are they hybrid teas, grandifloras, floribundas?
I don't know. Okay. I just grabbed them because I wanted pink roses.
Okay. So, I mean, that's going to have an impact on, how well they do, too. So, by going to the Missouri Botanical Garden website, tell them, or just put in, recommended pink roses and see which varieties they list. And then when if you're going to get some new ones, get the ones that they're recommending.
Yeah, but if I get new ones, don't plant them level with the ground. Plant them where they're up
right.
a little bit.
Exactly. You're going to have to add like 3 or 4 inches of, let's say, a topsoil compost blend in with the existing soil and then plant.
And but make the hole big enough to where I can put the compost in the hole.
Right. You're going to mix it all together. So you're just not going to put it in the hole. You're going to mix a whole surrounding area.
Yeah. The soil I dig out, mix that with the compost when I put the rose bushes in.
Right, exactly.
All righty. Thank you.
Sure. My pleasure. And now let's go to Barb's yard. Hi, Barb.
Oh, did I look?
Uh-oh. Barb, what happened? Give us a call back. And, there she is. Can we get her up? Hello, Barb, are you there?
Yes, sorry, pushed the wrong button. can you root...
Can you root? I didn't understand.
Can you root Moses in the cradle just by sticking them in the dirt, or do you have to root them like you would philodendrons?
They're pretty tough and durable, so not in dirt, but you can stick them in a potting mix, and they should be able to root that way. Or you can actually root those in water as well.
Oh, okay. Can root them like philodendrons. They have to, in other words, they have to have roots before you really plant them in potting mix or something.
Yeah, or you can, again, if you got a potting mix and you can just, the bottom, you know, let's say 1 inch or so of the stem can just be pushed down into the potting mix and then, let you know, they should be able to root from that.
Okay, you can do jade this, you can put put jade directly into potting soil, can't you?
Yeah, but I mean, that's going to be a little bit tougher because it's really a more or less a woody plant as opposed to the Moses and, you know, that you were talking about.
Okay. Thank you. Thank
sure.
you.
My pleasure. 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
We're going over to Chris's yard. Chris, how are you?
Oh, good, Mike. Thanks. I got a couple questions. I have a lilac bush that's full of buds, and last night we covered it with a sheet and then plastic over that and then kind of, you know, attached it so it wouldn't blow away. Is that the best thing to do to keep these buds from getting frost?
Nah, basically, I wouldn't put the plastic because that, you know, if it stays on there and the sun's out like this, it could really create a fungus problem, and that may
Well, no, be... we took the plastic and everything off first thing in the morning.
Okay, yeah, then you could do that.
That'll do.
Yeah.
And then the moss, I had it in the backyard. I was told to spray it with baking soda and water. It turned it orange, and then to scrape it off.
Right, and then...
And we reseeded.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the potential of it coming back, though, is, you know, pretty good.
Yeah, but this was like a carpet. You know?
Right. Oh, I know.
And then I have some daisy bushes. Do I fertilize now or do I wait a little bit?
The foliage is up, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. It's green on the bottom.
Yeah, I'd probably maybe wait until it warms up a little bit, but sometime next week when it's in the 50s, you can start fertilizing. First fertilizing or first two times... do it about half label rate, though.
Oh, okay. Well, great. Thank you very much.
Yep. And let's go over to Don's yard now. Hi, Don.
Hello, Mike. How you doing?
Good.
I'm calling concerning some begonias and this other one is called Dusty Mellow.
Okay.
What's the meaning of begonia bounce when they use the word bounce?
Gee, I don't know.
Is that more robust where they grow full of, you know what I'm saying, like the commercial line places use, you know, on commercial buildings and stuff?
Well, generally, those are just a larger variety of, like, angel wing and devil wing begonias. That's the ones that that you're going to see in a commercial setting. But those are available at garden centers.
Oh, they are?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the Dusty Miller, can you do they require a lot of sun. Mm-hmm. And if I put them in, can you take them out at the late part of fall and then replant some more next year?
Yeah, you can take them out, but don't expect those to survive inside over the winter time.
Oh, I wasn't expecting.
Okay.
I was going to.
So yeah, I mean they just want to have a really more or less dry soil, drier soil than what the begonias would, and they want to be in the brightest sun possible.
Okay. Uh-huh. You know, I don't need to water them every day then.
No, not at all. So thanks, Don, and let's go over to Corey's. Hi, Corey.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Two questions. One, is it too late to prune back some dwarf burning bushes?
No. Just okay. I mean, as long as the foliage, as long as the buds are not opening up with the, and we're really with the burning bush, it doesn't really all matter that much. Just don't cut a whole lot of them off, because if you cut it back too far, you may be getting to the point where there's no functional buds still viable.
Gotcha. Okay. Thank you. And then, are we too late to put down pre-emergent?
Generally, I would say yes, but with the way this weather and temperature, if you get it down soon, the forsythia is still in full bloom right now, and I would say you could probably go ahead and do it.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
Yep, my pleasure. And now let's go to Brian's yard. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Mike. Hey, I've got a question for you. Last fall, I overseeded my yard, and I got a very good stand of grass from doing that. Is it safe to put a crabgrass preventer on top of that fresh grass now, or is that not recommended to go on new grass?
Well, it could have a, you know, adverse impact, and be so. I mean, a preventer is basically going to go after the crabgrass seed as it germinates, and it's probably been too cool for the crabgrass seed to germinate. But I would say I would skip it and just let the, you know, work on the new grass, you know, that you have growing.
Okay. Okay. Thanks for answering my question.
Sure. My pleasure. And John, how are you today?
Just fine. How are you, Mike?
Good.
I just got back from nice warm Florida, and I have a big, beautiful azalea in the backyard. And I also have some, I can't even think of the name of them plants, but they're coming up out of the ground about an inch right now. I'm just wondering, is it too late? The damage been done to them with this cold weather that we've had, or is it okay just to try and cover them up tonight and see what happens?
Yeah, I would say you could go ahead and cover them and just use a sheet. I mean, should be fine. You can look at the foliage and see if it has cold damage, because the green will look blackish, you know, and kind of slimy. Not necessarily. It'll look kind of slimy. So that's how you can tell if it's gotten cold damage. But then if it's a good perennial, then it should, even if it's had damage on that foliage, it should be able to produce some new foliage as well.
Okay, the other ones, they're hostas that are coming up, and they're, like I say, they're up out of the ground about an inch right now.
Yeah, they could have had some damage as a result of that, but they should be okay.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yep, they're pretty tough. And I don't know if we can get another one in. We probably shouldn't. So Jim or Jan and Mike and Adrian, we're going to have to talk to you next week. So just remember, tonight's going to be equally as cold. All day long it's going to be cold. So the plant material that you have out there, the buds, all kinds of different stuff, could be some major damage. But good, healthy plants are able to survive these kind of things. They don't like it by any means. And the aesthetic value may be a little bit less than what you anticipate, but that's just kind of the reality of the circumstance of living here where we never know what's going to happen. Mike Miller, KMOS Garden Hotline. I'll see you next week.